And I'm happy to introduce our speaker, Elizabeth Lewis. Her sermon is on unconditional forgiveness.
I'm going to try and see how this goes. I'm so happy to be here and talk about my new latest passion. Next week I'll be teaching two all-day workshops on the How of Happiness, which those of you who took my How of Happiness class know that that thought alone makes me very happy. I sent an email to all my new students asking them which of the 12 happiness-enhancing activities identified by science would they like to pursue for those 2 days. Well, it turns out my students want to learn about cultivating optimism and savoring life's joys, and they want to learn about nurturing social relationships. Actually, they want to learn about all of the hows of happiness, except for how to forgive. I mean, I was like, come on, here I've just spent 9 months at the Midwest Institute for Forgiveness Training, learning to become a forgiveness facilitator, and nobody was interested in my new latest subject, my new latest passion. I kind of felt like I was all dressed up with no place to go. So I was telling my husband this bit of news, and he was like, well, I get their point. I'm not surprised. You know, forgiveness has no glamour, and it's not exactly fun. So why would anybody want to ruin a good time by talking about forgiveness? I was like, oh, and I had to forgive him for that one. But I know that there is truth in what he says. Forgiveness can be a messy business. Why would we want to purposefully court potential discomfort and forgive? Why would we want to reopen old wounds, perhaps? And why would we want to let somebody off the hook? I mean, one of the reasons why we don't forgive somebody is we know we're right about something and we're not going to let them off the hook. So why would we do that? We're right, we know we're right. And let's just put that all aside. And anyways, isn't it better, as one of my clients recently said to me when I was trying to talk to her about forgiveness, she said, isn't it just better to, you know, put these things aside? Let's not look at them. Isn't it just better to let sleeping dogs lie? Well, I'm here to say, no, it's not. Not if you want to be truly and deeply happy. Not if you want to ever experience that Dalai Lama-like joy, not if you want to have a true inner peace. Because as long as you hold on to resentments, large or small, you're chained to that person or the past in some way. And you continue to give that resented person, that resented experience, that resented situation power over you. I had a very good example of this happen recently. A friend of mine, we were catching up, and I was telling her that I was studying at the Midwest Institute for Forgiveness Training. She said, you know, that's kind of interesting, but I have no forgiveness issues. And then she said, though, you know, if I ever saw my brother-in-law again, I would take a baseball bat and beat his face until it was bloody. And then she looked down at her hands, and then she burst into tears. So even when we think we've put something aside because it's unpleasant and we don't want to look at it, our body-mind-spirit connection tells us something different. It says to us, hey, you've got unfinished business, you got to look at this, and that's still ping-ponging around in your body, mind, and spirit. If you're aware of it or not, it's still there. And there are other reasons to forgive. Some of the latest research says that forgiveness is good for our health. Research shows that the act of forgiveness decreases anxiety, stress, depression, and anger while increasing self-esteem. And forgiveness is also associated with lower blood pressure, a healthy heart, and decreased muscle tension. And who wouldn't want all that, right? Good stuff. As I said, learning to forgive is one of those 12 hows of happiness. Happiness research says that we need to, when we're on a road to happiness, we need to take things out of the realm of the mind and put them into action somehow in order to fulfill our heart's desire or our good intention. And that's what I learned at the Midwest Institute for Forgiveness Training. There I learned what's called a transformative process. You might even call it a skill set to learn how to accomplish forgiveness. It's called the Eight Steps or Eight Steps to Freedom. And it's a swift and permanent release and action into forgiveness, usually in an hour. Now here's the part that everybody goes, aha, what's the catch? Well, after some prep work is done, of course, we have to chop those carrots before we can make the stew, right? So we got to do that prep work. There's also a Five Steps to Freedom for Self-Forgiveness. And I've been working with some of my clients on this, and it's just been with really wonderful results, so I'm really thrilled about that. What was really surprising to me, though, when I first went up to the Institute was that I had instinctively done my own version of the Eight Steps to Freedom over a course of 12 years or so. It's so nice you can cut to the chase nowadays. In trying to bring forgiveness to the most painful experience of my life, which was my relationship with my mother. When I was going through the Institute training, I kept going, boy, I wish somebody had told me this whole process way back when, so that I could have just stepped through all this with a lot less pain and confusion. So I'm really happy to be sharing with people now this easier way to do things. We don't always have to take the hard road to healing. You know, sometimes we can find a path with somebody's help and make it much easier on ourselves and still have that great same result. So what are the eight steps to freedom? I'm going to take you through them now as I experience them in terms of forgiving my mother and what the Institute says. What you hear, some of it you might think, well, you know, that really is not forgivable. But I'm here to say that truly everyone and everything can be forgiven, and my life is kind of an example of that. But first things first, what do I mean when I'm talking about forgiveness? What is my definition of it? And what is unconditional forgiveness? At the Forgiveness Institute, we define forgiveness as an attitude of being willing to let go. An attitude of being willing to let go of unrealistic expectations of self and others. It is also a tool, the process by which this release, again, movement is accomplished, and it is the experience of the release itself, the dissolving of a stagnant and painful block inside you, followed by the sense of new open space in your body, mind, and spirit somewhere, and an influx of new vital energy. Earlier, when I related to you the story of my friend and her brother-in-law, what she really revealed to me that day was the existence of this stagnant and painful block inside of her. You might even call it a painful block of energy that hadn't been released yet. Unconditional forgiveness takes us further and can be defined as a profound and transformative experience of completely releasing any expectation that is causing us to suffer, forgiving everyone and everything. It restores our natural state of wholeness and happiness that is independent of what others have done or are currently doing. Put simply, forgiveness is an inner process, something we do for ourselves in the end, a mindful choice, very Thich Nhat Hanh, a mindful choice we make to free ourselves from the past or a present situation in order to access our most authentic selves, our soul selves, if you will, that best version of ourselves, our deeper selves, our higher selves. However you want to put it, it's all the same really in the end. This process is based on the understanding that the way other people act or situations evolve or experiences are lived, and whether we like them or not, is, in the end, really a matter of preference. And our disappointment when we label an experience as bad is really just a matter of unmet expectation. This is kind of a very mindful way of viewing forgiveness. You might call it advanced spirituality, if you will, as far as a practice. As a child, I was very familiar with unmet expectation. I grew up in Wauwatosa, the second of five children, the oldest girl. My father was an alcoholic who had many jobs and lost many jobs throughout our childhood. He would have blackouts and not remember things that he had done. My mother had a genius IQ and had graduated high school at age 16 after skipping several grades. She was a pharmacist. She worked as a pharmacist. In terms of my childhood, I would have preferred many things to be different. I would have preferred that I and my siblings would have been permitted to celebrate our birthdays. Birthdays were forbidden because my mother had deemed that we were not grateful enough to have them, so therefore they were forbidden. I would have preferred that voicing a dislike for a certain food not lead to being forced to eat that food until I threw up. I would have preferred not to be slapped across the face or beaten with a belt or spanked, pants pulled down, often in front of extended family with a fly sweater, really stings by the way, a belt or a strap. I would have preferred that my mother not have stolen drugs from the pharmacy where she worked and had not given me a steady stream of drugs, Valium and penicillin and shots of I have no idea what throughout my childhood. And most of all, after graduating from college on a visit home, I would have preferred not to walk into the living room with my mother and found my father attempting to sexually assault one of my sisters. My mother, upon seeing what was going on, said out loud to the room, "I did not see that," and she turned around and walked out the door. This was for me a matter, just a moment of shattering clarity. What followed was a string of really frightening and devastating events in which I called the police. My father was forced out of the home. My father threatened to kill both me and my sister. And I was disowned, thrown out of the family, and told I was dead to my siblings. I guess it was all my fault that I had called the police. In the end, my sister was forced by my mother to retract her account, recant what she had said, under the threat of also being disowned and thrown out of the house. It's an awful story, isn't it? I know it. Ugh. Full of many seemingly unforgivable things. In the original draft of my life story, the one that played over and over in my head for so many years like a stuck record, I was sure I was broken beyond repair, that I could never be fixed, that I was unlovable, and that I was doomed to be unhappy and alone forever. But the story I came up with is kind of like getting rid of story altogether, but I, in the end, chose a life that is so much better than I could have ever dreamed of. And forgiveness really played a really big part in that story. So how did I forgive this and so much more? And why? Why did I set upon a course of forgiveness? As I said earlier, the how was instinctively employing something similar to those 8 steps to freedom over a 12 to 13 year period. My whys for forgiveness were classic reasons. I was just tired of suffering. And I wanted to improve my health, which had really was precarious due to the stress of my childhood and all the drugs that I had been given. And I really wanted to bring joy into my life, though I had no idea what joy really was. It sounded really kind of good to me. In Mary Hayes Greco's book, Unconditional Forgiveness, she outlines the need to prepare to make a change in your life by enlisting support. It can be a friend, it can be a loved one. In my case, I chose a therapist. This is really kind of necessary if you're doing the 8 steps to forgiveness, and it's a bigger issue. You know, if you've got these little resentments that you let build up, you know, by all means, buy the book and kind of go through the 8 steps, but if you've got major stuff, you need the support of somebody else, and that's why I became a forgiveness facilitator, so that I could show people how it can be done. So I went into therapy and cried for a year, and then I got down to work. I needed that year to really understand and acknowledge the significance of what I had lived through in my childhood and the depth of my despair. I began to understand that I was not responsible for my parents' actions, which was this huge revelation to me. I always took the burdens of my whole family on and carried them around on my back, much like in this story. And although I had been told all my life that I was less than nothing, through therapy I began to realize that my true self tended to look at all things in terms of love and light, and those who've taken my workshops can kind of guess that probably. And because of that natural tendency, forgiveness became a really an imperative part of what I was beginning to look at as my, quote, recovery from my childhood. In the 8 steps to unconditional forgiveness, step 1 is to state your will to make a change. You say it out loud and you say it strong. which I did over and over again in front of my therapist. I started out by saying, I want to let go of my resentment and anger towards my mother, which eventually evolved into the will statement. Making it a will statement is very important. I will let go of resentment and anger towards my mother. Step two of the forgiveness process is to release your emotions by expressing your feelings as exactly as they are inside of you. If you think of emotions as energy, and they are, anybody who's into heart math knows this, you could say that I had a lot of stuck energy inside of me, unexpressed fear, anger, anxiety, resentment, sorrow. And voicing those feelings freed me from them. One of my clients recently said, I want to go to that part of this whole process because I don't want to have to say these words. But truly, that is what frees you, is getting out what's inside and putting outside of the body. Traditionally, this is a very big part of therapy, and frankly, it felt good to me. I got stuck here for over a year, and because I think really I had never been able to voice my own truth before, and usually was punished for it. So once I started to name my feelings, I couldn't seem to stop myself. There was a lot of cleansing tears involved in this process, kind of like riding ocean waves one at a time until coming home to shore. And I think I was kind of the shore, though I didn't know it at the time. Step three to freedom involves letting go of your expectations one by one. I shared some of those expectations with you. This part, again, took a while, and I didn't get it right the first time in therapy. I got stuck here. In the eight steps to freedom, this step involves shifting any expectations, large or small, that you might have to a positive preference. But at this point, I could only express my preference in the negative, which was, I wish that you hadn't betrayed me, abused me, and treated me with such hatred. Too negative, but I didn't know that at the time. At this point, I left therapy not realizing that there was more work to be done. Five more steps to complete if you go by the eight steps. Though my therapist, she did try to tell me this, but from what I could tell, I was happy enough. I seemed as happy as most people. And I didn't realize at this point that there's no ceiling on happiness. I thought, everybody's just kind of going around faking it like I am, so let's just put this all aside, you know. Then in 1994, when I was in my mid-30s, I was quite ill and had to have a hysterectomy, which kind of stirred up old wounds. So during my recovery period, I re-examined once again my life more deeply and found that something was indeed missing. I really longed for joy. I had been doing a lot of spiritual reading. I had been doing some meditation. And there was this thing called joy and peace. And I was like, wow, give me some of that. But I just couldn't figure out what that was and how to get it. When I had a glimpse of it, I couldn't sustain it. And I was like, oh, come on. So I turned again to that issue of forgiving my mother, something I had been working on at this point for about 12, 13 years. I'm so slow with these things sometimes. At this point, too, I did not know that reconciliation did not necessarily have to be a part of forgiveness. My therapist had never told me this. And so I really kind of geared up for, like, taking what I kind of, the equivalent of a really vile taste of medicine that I was going to do for my own good, darn it all. You know, I grew up Catholic, so that old Catholic girl, she started reasserting herself, and I just can't totally get rid of her. There she was again, so I was like, I'm going to do this for that reason. I re-entered therapy and invited my mother to join me for a therapy session. At this point, as I said, we had been estranged for 12 years now. And I was surprised that she said yes and very pleased. But it turned out she came to the therapy session so that she could say in front of an audience of the therapist that she had never loved me, could never love me because I was bad. Evil from the time I was born, she just knew this, and therefore I was unlovable. And she was completely justified in all that she had done. After my mother left the therapist's office, the therapist said, you know, I usually don't recommend this, but I would say do not see your mother anymore. I know, I was like, okay, permission. It was another moment of great clarity for me, like one of those aha moments that I felt in a very visceral, physical way, a kind of a relief, a release, a permanent acceptance and letting go. All within moments, and I would have gotten there without seeing my mother, but hearing her words made it so much easier. It was kind of like a door had been opened to a cage and I got to fly out, and it was fabulous. After that, I was able to go back to and reframe my preference in step three of the forgiveness process in the positive and put a true name to my true expectation. It was simple. I wish you had loved me in a healthy and sustaining way. Then I move quickly through the remainder of the steps. Step four is to restore your boundaries by giving the other person full responsibility for their actions and attitudes. In other words, you let them own their stuff. And you can do this in a very physical way. You give them their stuff back, whatever it is that they put on you that you isn't really yours. This is followed by visualizing your healthy personal space, perhaps a bubble of light and positive energy around you. For me, it kind of felt like I had been freed finally from a 150-pound weight that had been around my neck all my life. I did steps five and six together of the process, open to the universe, and those of you who are into the chakras, this will make sense, but open to the universe to get what you really need and then bring light and love into the body, emotions, and mind. In my version of this, this meant asking God and Goddess and anybody out there who would listen from, you know, the spirit world and my soul to help me with this inner cleansing. And you can do it like this with your hands. You can just ask for this to pour down in you. And therapy also and prayer were a huge part of this for me, among other things. Step seven is to send light and unconditional love to the other person and say words of releasing them, which I did. My mother never knew. She wouldn't want to know. She doesn't have to know. Again, forgiveness in the end really is a transformative inner process. Hey, if that other person is open to it and they're not dead, that's another thing. You can forgive those who are dead. But if they're open to it, fine. You know, after a little time after the forgiveness process, you can, you know, reconnect with them. But not everybody's open to it, and it is not a necessary part of it. The inner transformation is really the important thing. And finally, there's step eight. Step eight involves seeing the good in the other person, yourself, or situation. And I did. I was able to be grateful to my mother for having had a job throughout my childhood so that at least our basic needs of food and shelter were met. Over the years, I've been able to add to that list a gratitude for my mother. She was a catalyst, really, for understanding unconditional love, unconditional forgiveness, non-judgment, acceptance, letting go. One of my sisters says, we always know what to do. Whatever she would have done, we do the opposite, and it works out pretty good. So very grateful for that. I haven't reconciled with my mother. I know that would be healthy, but I have seen her on occasion since 1994. In 2007, I saw her at the deathbed of the sister who had shared that terrible day with me. My sister and I had long before that found our way back to each other and had become very close friends for the last about 12 or 13 years of her life. My sister had asked me to be part of her transition team in the dying process, and she had also expressed the need to forgive my mother. And so I called up my mother and said, can you come and be by her bedside? And she did. And I saw my mother again last year for her 80th birthday. One of my other sisters is very driven by guilt. She likes to should on herself quite a bit. And she thought that we should mark my mother's 80th birthday by visiting her for a few days in Oregon, but my sister was afraid to be alone with her. So she said, can you come with me? And I said, sure, I'll do anything for my sister. So what was really great is on the bookshelves in my mother's living room were two books that really took me by surprise and really delighted me. One was Being Peace by Thich Nhat Hanh, the fabulous Thich Nhat Hanh. And the other was Loving What Is by Byron Katie. And I said to my mom, wow, great books. And my mom said to me, can you believe two different doctors gave me this bull blank? What nerve. I just started to laugh. I said, well, that's one way of looking at it. You know, and that was the end of that discussion. At the end of those 3 days, I still felt as peaceful and joyous as when I had first come. I was able to see and feel very clearly when in my mother's presence that, on my part at least, forgiving her had provided a space between us for acceptance and letting go, while at the same time it felt like a miracle to me dissolved all space between us in a sense on my part of oneness. And I was filled over and over again with compassion for her self-induced misery. I was just like, oh, really? All that remained, whether she loved me or not, was that I loved her completely and unconditionally, and that was enough. This was the freedom that had been born through the process of unconditional forgiveness. No expectations, no preferences, just an acceptance of things as they are in the present moment. A freedom that's really open to all of us if we choose the path of forgiveness. Maybe my husband's right, maybe there's not much glamour in this whole process, but there's an awful lot of peace and joy to be had through releasing resentments large and small and embracing unconditional forgiveness and unconditional love. Thank you.